हरिः ॐ। श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
ओके, पेज 31। Srila Prabhupada concludes, "The conclusion is that the Lord, being all-powerful, can, under any and every circumstance, accept anyone from any part of the world, either personally or through his bona fide manifestation as the spiritual master. Lord Chaitanya accepted many devotees from communities other than the Varnashramites, and he himself declared to teach us that he does not belong to any caste or social order of life, but that he is the eternal servant of the Lord who maintains the damsels of Vrindavan, Lord Krishna." C.C. Madhyalila, 1380. That is the way of self-realization, right? Because the soul is beyond, so the soul can always take up the process. That's the thing. The soul can always take up the process. Right? Sugati Goswami continues, "He is the Super Soul and the Supreme Lord of all self-realized souls. He is the personification of the Vedas, religious scriptures, and austerities. He has worked so the Vedas themselves are where, you know, the basis of everything, the religious scriptures, then the other scriptures that are there, and then the austerities means practicing those. Mm-hmm. Right? Because from that you have duties, you practice that, that's austerity. Mm-hmm. Right? So that means the whole process is him. The basis is him, the practical application is him, and what it is that you're applying is him. Right? He's also the result, mm-hmm. he's experience, he's everything. Yes.
So that means not only birth, but any situation you can do.
Birth in any situation, you can always be Krishna conscious, you can always connect with the Lord. It's his place. That's the whole point, is there's this idea that, no, this is our place, and God's kind of a foreign concept. No, this is his place. And not being God conscious is actually the foreign concept.
So when you're offering to the Lord, It's already his.
It's already his, but the point is it's the interaction. Sugadev Goswami continues, "He is the Super Soul and the Supreme Lord of all self-realized souls. He is the personification of the Vedas, religious scriptures and austerities. He is worshipped by Lord Brahma and Shiva and all those who are transcendental to all pretensions. Being so revered and awed with veneration, may the Supreme Absolute be pleased with me. May Lord Sri Krishna, who is the worshipable Lord of all devotees, the protector and glory of all the kings like Andaka and Vrishni of the Yadu dynasty, the husband of all goddesses of fortune, the director of all sacrifices and therefore the leader of all living entities, the controller of all intelligence, the proprietor of all planets, spiritual and material, and the supreme incarnation on earth, the supreme all in all, be merciful upon me." That basically doesn't leave a whole lot out. Right? Yeah. 19-20. In Krishna Sandarbha, Anucheda 56, Srila Jiva Goswami points out the special significance of Sri Sukadeva's utterance of verse 20. What is the need to explain this point any further? Lord Krishna's pastimes are described to the exclusion of any other topic. In the 10th and 11th cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, which constitute half of the entire book, other forms of the Lord are summarily described in the first 9 cantos, whereas the pastimes of Lord Krishna are elaborately described in the 10th and 11th cantos. We may therefore conclude that the description of Lord Krishna is the principal subject matter of the Bhagavatam. We may also note that Sukadeva Goswami begins the teaching of the Bhagavatam by appealing for the mercy of Sri Krishna, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.4.20, in the following words. May Lord Sri Krishna, who is the worshipable Lord of all devotees, the protector and glory of all the kings like Andaka and Vrishni of the Yadu dynasty, the husband of all the goddesses of fortune, the director of all sacrifices and therefore the leader of all living entities, controller of all intelligence and the supreme incarnation on earth, the supreme all in all, be merciful upon me. It is the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna who gives liberation. By thinking of his lotus feet at every second, following the footsteps of authorities, the devotee in trance can see the absolute truth. The learned mental speculators, however, think of him according to their whims. May the Lord be pleased with me. So the devotees, they're following the Lord or thinking of the Lord according to... Maybe you've mentioned to them, yeah, we know that there's stuff inside and we feel very bad. But we're having a class here in which they can communicate in lesser decibels. It would be highly appreciated. Because, I mean, I know that when somebody's 2 feet away, if you don't shout, they won't scream. But...
Maybe they can wave a little.
Yeah. Okay. Well, try some Italian, you know. So, following the footsteps of authorities, the devotees follow in the footsteps of authorities, and that's what makes it all work. Right? But... For the mental speculators, then they just think of him as they please. And according to whim, which aspect they want to think, how they want to fit him in. Right? So it's just according to the individual speculator. There's not like a standard or anything. They just use whatever they like, when they like, and change it as they please. Right? So there's no standard. So that kind of relationship cannot create any definitive interaction. Right? That's the difficulty. Text 21. In his commentary to this verse, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur makes an important distinction between real knowledge about God and mental speculation. May Krishna give me knowledge. Those purified by samadhi at the Lord's feet see the true form of Paramatma. But other learned people speak of him according to their taste. By the power of their learning, some say he's Paramatma, but others will speak of him as having form, having no form, the Jiva who is small, or an all-pervading Jiva. Or others will speak of the universe as false, though it appears true and eternal. Thank you. They speak according to their intelligence, but their intelligence has not been purified. Therefore, they do not see the truth about the Atma. Right? Because the point is when we use intelligence, then intelligence itself specifically is objective. Right? Because all it does is analyze what you're working with. The difficulty about the intelligence is what does it analyze? Right? Is it on its own choosing things to analyze? No, the mind gives it things to analyze. So therefore, there's no such thing as objective. So now the problem is now what do the devotees give the intelligence to analyze? The teachings of authority. Right? But for the mental speculators, then it's going to be whatever is attracted to them in their mind. Right? Their God, you know, God may be God, God is, you know, Jiva, God doesn't exist, God's an all-pervading Jiva, God's Brahman, God's Paramatma, you know, who is God? You know, I mean, it's just like, you know, it's just, it doesn't matter. So you're starting with that, then they're going to analyze that. So if that's what you're starting with, you can never actually come up. Right? That's the whole point. It's like, it's not going to work. Right? If I take a duck, I analyze it very carefully. Am I going to figure out how to grow cabbages?
I don't think so.
No. So that's the point. It doesn't matter how intelligent you are, you cannot come up with the proper understanding. So because the intelligence is working on its own, it's working on the mind's own perception. Analyzing that eternally, you'll still never understand God.
Yeah.
Right? So only when you get information about God from God and His representatives, the devotees, then analyzing that by the Lord's grace, then you can understand.
Yeah.
It's simple. It's not like, no, we can do this. It's like, no, you can't. it's not possible.
But what about it?
There's always the but what about. Yes.
Why it's not possible?
You didn't just explain it? if you're analyzing the correct thing, then you can come up with a correct answer. But if you're analyzing the wrong thing, how do you come up with the correct answer? You know, it's just like, okay, how is 15 plus 39 22? Can you explain that to me? No. So that's the whole point, is that you're starting with the wrong premise. It doesn't matter how you analyze it, it's not going to work. Yeah.
So mental speculation basically has nothing to do with the intelligence. It's all about the mind.
It's all about the mind. That's why then, when it's connected to Krishna and authority, we call it contemplation. Right? It's manana.
Right.
But if we don't, then it's mental speculation. It's also amongst the non-devotees called manana. Right? Because you don't really have much else to call it. You know? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But it's not what you call... It's not the actual point. So that's why this idea of the modern academic, that they're using the academic method and being objective means I guess, to be fair, we'd have to say 100% bogus. You know? I mean, saying 108, then they might think that's subjective because, you know, 108 is important to us. So
yeah.
We'll just say 100%.
Right,
then they have to, you know, be comfortable that it's a scientific approach.
Yeah.
See, because the thing is they'll only analyze what they find important, and in a way, and as we see, is okay, even if it's analyzed nicely. But what is going to, what having analyzed all that, how is one going to decide which aspect of the analyzation you're going to take as the prominent? It's always going to be according to the ego.
Mm-hmm.
So even if they come up with something, right, they can't analyze it that way. I mean, they can't come up with that conclusion. Even if all the facts point one way, if it's not their identity, they will choose a different way. So in other words, you're opening with, of course, you're opening with the senses, which are already imperfect. So that's a problem. But in any case, leaving that aside, just take the part we call reasoning. You're starting with what the mind finds of value, and you're ending how the mind identifies itself. So neither of those are exactly what you'd call objective. So there's technically, for the jiva, there's no such thing as objective.
Right.
And it's not a problem because the whole world's going on by this and people seem to be quite happy.
Mm.
So it's not that objectivity is actually a necessity for the jiva. The difficulty is that they create a false identity that they are objective.
Mm.
And that sets them apart from all the other ordinary people. All it is they're subjective in a very particular way. Right? Which, in other words, that guy's subjective, but he's just saying it. You know, I mean, how you say it? Yeah, he's subjective. But my subjection is special. I have a bibliography of 500, you know, how you say, you know, quotations here, you know, or references. Therefore, my subjectivity is better. That's basically what's the position.
And nobody really wants to argue with them because it's just such a drag.
That means they're clever with words.
Yeah.
They're good wordsmiths and so therefore, and they have a real attitude when it comes to that. Because it's like the doctor. The doctor, it doesn't matter, even if you know everything about medicine, if you're not a doctor, then you're a layman, you can know nothing. It's just the way they work. It's so disgusting. But whatever it is, it makes them happy, right? So the academics do the same. The mental speculators, the philosophers, anyone who considers himself intellectual, they do the same thing. You know, the Vedic scholars, everybody. It's just standard. So that's the difficulty, is that... And they can't know the Lord. You can only know when you're connected with the chit potency. Then what you're dealing with, that's real. Otherwise, what we perceive with the senses and what the mind chooses is already unreal. So if you analyze an illusion, how do you come up with reality? That's the problem. So when you're in touch with the chit potency through the mercy of the Lord, the devotees, then what you're analyzing is real. Then that, and you identify as servant of the Lord, there's that submission, then you can understand the Lord will reveal himself. But even if you heard it from the right source, if you still don't identify, if there's no submission, you still won't understand it, because your final conclusion will always be wrong. Because it's based on ego. Is that right? Yeah.
So, you know, I understand that, I mean, as soon as consciousness enters the equation, everything's subjective. The experience of one person with the same object is going to be different than another person. It can be like that. It's a cold, relative position, warm, cold, hot, cold, this thing, that thing. But here's my question. There's a lot of division.
There's a lot of division
amongst the devotees. So over the years, I thought, okay, there's many levels of understanding. There's many stages to this. So someone, and actually, I think I heard you give a talk once, that you have to let something go to the next level. You know, at some one level, something may be true, and then you have to move beyond that. Right? There's something like that. Anyway, there's. Prabhupada says a philosopher has his own point of view, his own angle, his own spin, a mood.
That's a mood.
Right. But Prabhupada said in one purport, a philosopher, he just broadened it. So, how do we harmonize, you know, I mean, there's devotees that get into it, you know, one position against another position, and then they make a campaign out of it. How do you get
around
above that?
The point is that it's about Krishna. The point is to understand Krishna, to please Krishna, how, as the acharyas have given us, as mentioned here, is that if it's not coming from the devotees, then it won't really be understood, right? It is the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who gives liberation. By thinking of his lotus feet at every second, following in the footsteps of the authority, the devotee in trance can see the absolute truth. So the essential point is that following in the footsteps of authority. Otherwise, then one can't actually follow the process. The process won't work. So you're going to be dealing with Krishna as the wide range of everything that is can be experienced, can be understood, can be perceived. But at the same time, as there is recommended ways of approaching that, because even though Krishna's created all the different situations, there are certain ones he likes. So if you only have the situation specifically that you like, it loses that particular flavor. So there's always a variety. So variety is always there. So there's not a problem in variety, but that variety has to be connected to the Lord. The difficulty comes is when the variety is not connected to the Lord, when we're bewildered or distracted by the things of this world. So that means we're dealing, if we're saying yukta vairagya, means we're connecting things of this world to Krishna. But that means connection is yukta, it has to be connected to Krishna. And there must be vairagya, it must be done in naishkarmya, that the result's not mine. If it's not done in that way, it's not yukta vairagya, or it's very weak. Right? So you're not actually dealing with a wide variety of things, because there's not different paths, there's only one path. It's just where you're situated on the path and which direction you're looking. That's all. There is only one path. So it's not, it's various perceptions on the one absolute truth. Right? Because there's only one topic matter in the Veda, and that's Krishna. There isn't a second topic matter. Means the Ayurveda is about Krishna, the Stapanaveda is about Krishna, right? The Jyotirveda is about Krishna, the Vedas are about Krishna, the Puranas, everything's about Krishna. It's just taking different aspects of it. You know, just like, let's say, you have an item, let's say a piece of furniture, so you may look at the aesthetics of it, you may look at the price of it, you may look at the construction of it. You may look at how practical it is in the way of use. You may look at the social status of it. Because some things have zero value, very minimal value, but great social status. Like I mentioned, we were in London, and I think it was in Sainsbury's. They're kind of like a little bit above kind of the average supermarket. And, you know, as is standard, they're all kind of doing this greeny push, right? So they have, instead of using paper bags, they had this kind of canvas bag, you know, with kind of long straps you could wear on the shoulders so you could put things in it and take it home instead of using paper bags. So they were selling it for £5. So when I came to London, we went in, I saw them there, they were there. I mentioned to somebody, you want to get one of these? And they said, oh no, and this and that. So after, I think it was like 6 weeks or something, when I was leaving, then on the next month's in-flight magazine, one of the things it was talking about latest things in fashion. The latest thing in fashion was those bags that now sold on eBay for £200. Because they only made one batch of them and sold them. So it's not really worth anything, but people make it into something. You understand? Mm-hmm. So that's the whole thing. It may have a value, it may not have a value. We place a value. So all these are different ways you could look at that same piece of furniture. And so, but it's only one piece of furniture. So you have all these different, so those aren't different opinions. They're just different perspectives on one thing. Is that something? Else?
Yeah. My question is, how do you reconcile?
That's how you reconcile.
That you're dealing with the same object and you're having different perspectives.
Yes, but there's also a hierarchy of perspectives. Mm-hmm. But it's only one perspective. It's just like, okay, English. Mm-hmm. Right, the standard government curriculum of English, right, starts at nursery and ends at grade 12. Mm-hmm. It's only one course. You're not talking about a different thing, but there is a gradation. So Sakam is lower than Nishkam. Starting with yourself is lower than starting with Krishna. Basing it on the Veda is better than basing it not on the Veda. Mode of goodness, the application is better than passion or ignorance. So there are gradations. So that's why the Bhagavatam is giving these fine points how to analyze, then you know where the position is. Right? Does that make sense? Because, yeah. So you just have to see what's the bigger vision.
Okay. Yes. It appears that the final gradation discussion was between Ramananda Roy and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Yes, yes. And they started at Varnashram as the bottom, so anything outside that doesn't even count.
Yeah, they wouldn't waste that time.
Yeah, they wouldn't. They're starting from there. Because where they're starting from is where other sampradayas consider it is actually, you know, a process of Abhideya. Hmm. To explain is that Dasyam, then the Madras and the Shris, the practice of Varnashram in connection with the Lord is considered Dasyam. For us, it's not. It's the attitude of service of the Lord, engaging in the recommended process. Varnashram is one of those things you can utilize in that process. But it's not that it specifically is, you know, the form of Dasya. Because for the others, then going to Vaikuntha, where that's a prominent element, then it's, that's your, in other words, you're practicing the lifestyle you would do there. For us, it's not about the lifestyle, it's about the attitude. Right? Which has the fineness of the variety. On reverence is the same attitude. It'll have variety, of course, but it's very straightforward. It's on reverence, service, you know, varnashram. You put that together, it's very obvious what to do. But this other, it's all about, you know, what do you do when God is wrapped up in a snake? And he's looking fine. He's not worried. You know? Like that. And you come and then all the cowherd boys and cows are all dead. Now what? You know, so these are things that Vaikuntha is not prepared to deal with. You know what I'm saying? Sitting there thinking about, yes, okay, in Vrindavan they do those. They don't do those in Vaikuntha. You know, that's where they live. No one does that. Right? So they could talk about it as a separate thing if they have that interest. Some do. Like that.
Wait, is that good? Yes. Actually, by Krishna, almost by comparing to the Leela, the dynamic Leela of Krishna, it's almost boring.
But because it's about Krishna, then it's not boring. Because it's not about, it's not so much what's going on, it's that what's going on gives an opportunity to exchange that love. So that's the whole point. So it can be very simple, it can be very elaborate, it can be very opulent, it can be not like that. It doesn't. Because in Vaikuntha you have the opulence, and the opulence is also an aspect of the variety, meaning the appreciation. But in Vrindavan, opulence is not an aspect of appreciation.
It's suppressed, it's hidden.
It's hidden, but it's greater.
Right.
There's more opulence in Vrindavan than there is in Vaikuntha.
Right.
But it's just standard, no one worries about it. You know, it's just like the kid who grew up with the parents staying in 5-star hotel, it's no big deal. It's just another hotel. Oh no, we're at this one again. Like that. You know, why aren't we at that one? Oh, they were already booked, you know. Well, why didn't you book it ahead of time? Come on, we did it 6 months, you know. Why didn't you do it 9 months? You know, it's just for them as normal. So they don't take it as something special. But because the focus is so much on Krishna that the facilities are only there to enhance that absorption in Krishna. It's the same in Vaikuntha, but it's just the facility plays a greater role. That's why for us to become distracted by the facilities is not at all recommended. So when that comes up, then it gets too much. In other words, we have that's why it's not a big deal for us. We don't make it into a thing. Yes, you can eat whatever you want, dress whatever you want. You can do all that because it's about thinking of Krishna. But if you're making it that what you eat and what you dress is prominent, then that's not Braj. It just isn't. So you can make it prominent if you want, but that's not going to get you into Vrindavan. Good chance it won't even get you into Vaikuntha, but you know you have a better chance there. Because if it starts with you, and basically that's the important element, then how is that Braj? Sarva Dharma means you start with Krishna, and then you engage what you have.
There are other Leela avatars.
Hey, knock yourself out.
Meaning, in Vaikuntha, do the Leelas extend, you know, to the spiritual world?
They don't. The forms are always four-armed Vishnumurtis. Okay. The specialness of the forms here are specific to here. Like Varaha here will be in the form of a boar, and Vaikuntha he'll be a four-armed Vishnumurti. Nisringa also. They're all like that. But there's flavors. Ram has his own place, so then that works like that. But you have to be in the rules to go there. In his commentary to this verse, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur makes an important distinction between real knowledge about God and mental speculation. Did we just read this?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're on Srila Prabhupada confers.
Yeah.
As stated in the Brahma Samhita, the mental speculators, even by dint of learned scholarship, cannot even dream of the absolute truth by speculating over it for eternity. Because he was explained, mechanically you can't do it. But it's dependent upon the Lord's mercy. So you're not looking for the Lord's mercy, and the mechanical system you're using is useless. Then what's the chance?
By logic, reasoning, you can't understand that which is inconceivable. And inconceivable means that which is beyond the material world.
The Lord reserves the right of not being exposed to such mental speculators, because he reveals himself. Because he, what we can say is, no, I will find out by my intelligence. But the point is this point that Mahabharata is making, is that it's beyond. Inconceivable means beyond. Because what is the intelligence? The intelligence is dead matter. How is dead matter going to understand the absolute truth, which is conscious? Because intelligence is not conscious. The living entity projects their consciousness into the material element of intelligence, and then by the Lord's arrangement through the modes, it works, it functions. Right? The car is sitting there. Does it do anything? No, it's just dead matter. Right? But if you put petrol and you get in it and drive it, then it does something. But it's not that the car is going to ever figure out something or take you to know where to take you. Right? You can't tell the car home, James. It's not going to work. Right? Yes.
So when people are talking about artificial intelligence, what's missing is actually the desire, the consciousness.
There's no consciousness. So, what is the artificial intelligence going to deal with?
Something we put into it.
What we put into it, which means the mind of the scientist who's dealing with it. Right? So, all it is he's enhancing what he can speculate. He's giving himself more options. is they'll do something, and then from that they'll choose something, then expand that again. That's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining, the intelligence does. It takes a wide variety of things, and, or it takes something, it finds a category for it. Right? So then you know how to what to deal with it, the perspective of it. Then having categorized it, then you take that category and expand the category to get your options. Right? Then you choose your options, right, according to your ego. So that's all they're doing, is they're putting some information in, getting so many options, then choosing one of those, right? Then putting that information in again, and expanding that again, and then they've been doing that for a long time, you know, since they were doing it with, you know, all those diodes and catheters and... Catheters? No, no. Capacitors. Catheters. It would be a little hard to work with. It might work. Probably what the guy needs is something like that. Yes,
capacity,
yes.
So I can understand a materially conditioned mind, the intelligence, and the influence of time and the modes of material nature can't approach transcendence.
Right.
I can understand that. But aren't we here applying our intelligence to try to understand so many things? I
mean, we are.
Is there purified intelligence?
There is, that's what he mentions. But their intelligence has not been purified. So the point is you connect it to Krishna, then you're working nicely. The point is they're talking about the mixed element. So it's not that the part connected to Krishna isn't fine, it's the part that's not. Right? Making the statement that anything can be connected to Krishna is fine. Right? But what's the purpose of saying that?
Connecting.
Is it to connect it to Krishna, or is it to do what you want? So in other words, the statement's great. But the reason they're making the statement may not be so great. You know, you should do this duty. Oh, we're not this body, Prabhu. What's the point? The point is to actually understand the absolute truth, or to do what you want? You know? You know, do this service, well, I don't have the nature. No, but we're not this body. What's the whole point? You want to manage it so that it works. You want the person to do what you want, even though they don't have the capacity. What's the point? So in other words, the connections may be correct, but what's the purpose of connecting it? Because as we mentioned, it, the impersonalist can accept that bhakti is the only process to get liberation. There are impersonalists who have that much intelligence. Guru Vayur, if you go to Guru Vayur, you'll only see wonderful devotional activities going on. They take the deity out on an elephant 3 times a day, right? We do it once a week. They do it 3 times a day. And they stay out in the evening 1-3 hours. All they do the whole time is chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. When the deity takes prasad, they sing Gita Govinda. That's at every offering. Like that. So, okay, looks good. Now that worship was established by Shankaracharya. And everyone there in that temple is a hardcore Mayavadi. So they're all doing that bhakti just for liberation. It's the only temple that I know of this kind of sampradaya that does that. But the point is they're doing it. So they're quoting the right verses, but their intention is not necessarily great.
So what's the motive? What's behind it?
What's the intention?
Right.
That's why also when you're having a discussion, it's important that to know what they meant by their word. What was their intention? Because sometimes somebody says something, they mean one thing, but the words they use weren't the appropriate ones, so then taking that, you can use it against them and win an argument, but that wouldn't be a proper discussion. Because it's not about winning, it's about Siddhanta conclusion. That's why there's a difference. The Vedas doesn't make, Nyaya doesn't make a distinction between logic and rhetoric. But the West does. So you can know rhetoric and not use any logic. So you can win an argument, though it was not in any way done logically.
Besides Dasmula, has anyone written a condensed expression of Gaudiya Siddhanta.
Means, why would you need more condensed than that? Means you have Navaparamayas, which are the same thing without rasa. Or if you're just discussing just straight philosophy, not getting into the aspect of rasa.
What's the name of that?
Navaparamaya. But that's only used in connection with Bhagavad Gita and Vedanta Sutra.
And who's the author of that?
That would be Baladeva Vidyabhushan. And it's called Siddhanta Shyamantaka. But it's the same thing. It means in the things in the back of the study guide, it has the comparison. Okay. So Madhvacharya uses that. Because he's just going out to smash Mayavadis, so you don't need to bring up rasa. So he uses that Navaparamaya. He got it from Lord Chaitanya. So it's the same thing. So the Dasamrula and Navaparamaya come from Lord Chaitanya. So one is for describing the whole philosophy, the other is for just presenting philosophy. That's all. If you're presenting philosophy to non-devotees, you use Navaparamaya. If you're discussing with devotees, you use Dasamrula. That's the... The Lord reserves the right of not being exposed to such mental speculators, and because they cannot enter into networked stem of the lotus stem of the Lord, all material speculators differ in conclusions, and at the end they make a useless compromise by saying, as many conclusions as many ways. So that's also a difference. Is in the Achintaveda Veda Tattva, there's no need of compromise. Because everything, we have a system how everything can be connected at whatever level one is functioning from. So there's no point of compromise like that. Because it's all connected to Krishna. Yes?
For us, why do we always forget about the Achintaveda Veda Tattva and always like down that either black or white?
It's just practice, it's just habit. You know, because you're looking at, okay, what makes profit, what doesn't make profit. Because what we'll call white is what makes profit. What we'll call black is what doesn't make profit. So it means that's how we'll define it. Right? In other words, government calls black, you know, black because they don't make profit. Right? You know, so it's always the principles, so we'll look at it from our perspective, which is natural because everyone's an individual. But that's why if your individuality is brought in connection with Krishna, then this unlimited individuality can function very nicely together. But if not, the differences can be so great there's no compatibility. But when Krishna is made the center, then it's always compatible. Like how many rings in a lake when you throw in a rock? Right? It's unlimited. But the point is they all perfectly work together because Krishna is the center. So that's the thing, is that there's no problem in adjusting everything into Krishna consciousness. But the point is pleasing Krishna is the goal of doing that. So wherever you start, it doesn't matter. So that's the point. But having done that, in other words, Gita has started everybody from whatever point they are. But at the end of Gita, it's pointed out, but Sarva Dharma Parityaja, give up your religions and surrender to me. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like this. Is there... Let's say you see guys that, you know, they're really, really into, you know, bicycles. Right? You know, the ones with thin tires and all that. What are they wearing? Yeah. But what is that? You know, this kind of, you know, three-quarter super tight thing, you know, the funny helmet, you know, all these different things. You know, ideally a few logos here and there, you know, like that. You know, and if you're really top of the line, then you have one of those, the ones that has no brakes and no gears, right? It's direct, right? Then you really know, okay, this is really hardcore, right? So, you know, if you showed up at one of those things, you know, at one of their meets, and you know, you were dressed in some, you know, baggy pants and a t-shirt, and you know, some sunglasses, and you know, and you had 24 gears on your bike, what are they going to think? This is wrong. What is it? It's a dharmic. It's against religion. It's against the religion of the, you know, how you say, road racing, bicycle, you know, enthusiast. Right? But you'd never show up in that kind of outfit or that kind of bike if it was the off-road guys. Right? They got a whole different kind of scene. You understand? So that is religion. This is the religion it's talking about. We create our own religion, you know, based on our conditioning. So yes, you can connect those. It's not a problem. But to say that that's where it's going to end, that's not pure devotional service. Because Gita ends with that, Bhagavatam starts with that. So the last instruction is Sarva Dharma Parityaja. And then in Bhagavatam it opens that we kick out anything that's not meant for pure devotional service. In other words, anything lower than Naishkarmya, they're not even going to talk about it. They're going to explain what is lower, but it's not going to be the examples, that's not going to be the focus. So that means anyone not changing their position, doesn't matter what he is. You know, he's a, you know, the banker, you know, he's got his suit, he's got his place, he's a meat eater. Doesn't matter. You don't need to change any of that. You just introduce God consciousness. Right? Associate with devotees. Right? Do some service. Hear about Krishna. You don't have to change anything else. It's not that, oh, when he becomes vegetarian, then no. It's just you don't have to change anything. You don't. In other words, we as preachers don't focus on that. We focus on the God consciousness. Now, becoming purified, then he'll at some point he'll develop Shraddha, and then he'll want to associate with devotees. Now, wanting to associate, naturally he's going to see their lifestyle. So then what's going to come up next? Bhajana Kriya. So now he's going to want to know what's the lifestyle of devotee. What is this thing? What's the recommendation? Right? And then we're going to go through anartha nivritti and then come out to be stable in Krishna consciousness based on the point that it's about Krishna. Right? You may be engaging your conditioning, you're comfortable with that, but the point is it's not about your conditioning. It's just what's engaged. Until one comes to the higher platform where even that's given up. So that's the progression. So we can start it, doesn't matter where the guy is, it doesn't matter. So then it progresses through. That's the natural thing. But if you make a philosophy, no, we're going to stay at this point, and that's fine, because Krishna says it's okay. Yes, he does, but there's other verses that say, yes, it's okay, but don't stay there. Because if you stay there, then you run the risk of having to come back to render that kind of service. Right? Because in Vrindavan, it's pure unalloyed devotion. So they only will do things that are nice for Krishna. And if you want to do, you know, in this particular way, by a particular conditioning and situation, then you have to do that here. Right? It's just, they don't have suburbs in Vrindavan. You know, so. Right? There are no academics. Yes.
But how to engage a person like that, a meat eater, someone who's not following any principles? What do you tell them?
You start talking about the soul, about God, about their relationship.
Contemplate.
First, they have to be convinced. Because these people are practical. They want to see what does it mean? How is it valuable? So it's not about sentiment. That'll come later. Point is they can chant. Chanting is the most powerful thing. Not being a vegetarian. If that was it, then all the pigeons of the world would all be great devotees. You understand? So it's not about that. Many times we preach vegetarian. We should be preaching chanting Hare Krishna. Right? Taking prasad. That's the point. We're vegetarian because we take prasadam, or it's remnants of Krishna. And Krishna eats vegetarian. That's why we're vegetarian.
Krishnatarian.
Yes, Krishnatarian. Do you understand? It's not about the vegetarian. It's about taking Krishna's remnants. It's different. You know what I'm saying? So that's why you have to be careful about getting into these kind of different distractions. Wasn't there something made the other day about foodies? There was some reference about foodies, and it put them into a category along with so many other mundane perspectives. I remember about 2-3 days back, I was referenced giving a long list of ways to get distracted, and food was one of them. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the food becomes more important. Oh, if it's not organic, then it's not prasad. No, if it's not offered to Krishna, it's not prasad. Right? You know? For Krishna, it's the devotion. He really doesn't care about, you know, a free range cabbage. It really doesn't matter to him. You know. Does that make sense? For him, it's the arrangements that you did it for him that's important. If he's not attracted to the queens of Dwarka, why would he be attracted to your, you know, your organic lettuce? You know what I'm saying? It's only because of their affection he responds to that, reciprocates that. So if it's done with affection, that's what Krishna reciprocates. Now, if you value that, you offer that. But then since when is one individual's conditioning the ultimate conditioning? Because if we want to talk about ultimate conditioning, you don't get any better than Lord Brahma. Now that's high grade, high quality conditioning. But even his prayers in that don't impress the Lord. Right? It's the devotion. So that's why we have to understand is that these things, that they are a fact and they're important, but there's something always more important. And if you're not aware of that, then the importance of the thing loses some of its position. Does that make sense? So that's why it becomes sometimes confusing. Like, what's Prabhupada's position on Varnashram? And once, in the same purport, he'll talk about the glories of it. At the same time, he'll talk about the weakness. So the point is the glory is its connection to the Lord and being a superior system. The weakness is identifying with it and getting distracted by it. So then devotees will say, well, it's contradictory. No, it's not. It's just like I tell you about, at one set, oh, we got these, you know, ceramic knives. They're so fabulous, or this, that, super sharp, so many things like that. But, you know, just because they're light and all that and don't seem like much substance, they'll still cut you very badly. So you have to be really careful. You know, if you drop them, they'll break, this, that, blah. Does that mean I don't like ceramic knives? You understand? So that's the difficulty. That's why mental speculation won't get you anywhere. It has to be connected to Krishna in a proper way, recommended way, authorized way. Does that make sense? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yata rucham. It says according to your taste. So we accommodate according to taste, but we ultimately say it's not according to our taste, it's according to Krishna's taste. Now, Krishna reciprocates our taste as long as our taste is about his taste. Then it works. Yes.
So can we say that for the Nisha Bhakta, he is purifying his whimsical tendencies?
Yes, he is. And it's glorious if the intent is pure devotion. But as soon as the intent is not pure devotion, then it's looked at in a bad light. Then you have the comments about Aropya Siddhi and things like that, mixed devotional service. We take that perspective when someone is comfortable with it. When they're trying to progress, though they may not be very advanced, then we're looking at it, the devotees, they're special, they're liberated, this, all those kinds of elements. So that's why you have these two perspectives. Right? One is to inspire, because that's the intent. The other is to correct, so that the proper understanding is seen. Does that make sense? So that's why you have the both. We focus the most on the inspirational element. That's why Baladev, his presentation is what we use for preaching, for cultivating, for nourishing. Like on that level. But at the same time is for understanding the position that one's in the actual thing, then Vishwanath gives very exacting positions. Right? So that combination works very well. Right. But the Lord is not like a shopkeeper trying to please all sorts of customers in the mental speculator exchange. The Lord is what He is. That's Shastra. The absolute personality of Godhead. And He demands absolute surrender unto Him only. Also Shastra. So that's the point, is that He'll accommodate anything, He'll work with you wherever you are, but there still has to be intent of pure devotion. If it's not, He demands surrender. And He will create obstacles. Like that. Because why does He demand? Because that's the only thing that's good for you.
Mm. Is it that we will surrender no matter what? It's just a matter of what?
It's
what
just to, a matter of time.
How good quality it is?
No, it's a matter of time. Everyone will come to that, will go back to Godhead. It's just a matter of how long you want to stay here. So, since Krishna, out of affection, wants to interact with the living entity, that's why we don't want to delay the process. Right? Krishna's an anxiety that so many living entities are suffering because of their not interacting with Him, right? In a favorable way. So, therefore, then the preaching mission is there to bring those living entities to Krishna. Because that's what He does Himself. He comes to the material world to interact with the devotees.
I'm thinking that material energy is also Krishna. It's just a lesser quality of interaction.
Yes. No, it is. It is. But the point is you don't get the benefit because you don't know it's Krishna. Right. As soon as you know it's Krishna, you're on the Brahman platform, and yeah. Then you don't have any problems.
Exactly.
Like that.
The Brahman platform, is it something given, or is it something we can perceive by austerity, for instance?
Is Brahman Krishna? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. So therefore, can we know Krishna by austerities, by knowledge, by sacrifice, by charity, or it's only by devotion?
Only devotion.
Yes, so even the Brahman platform is only appreciated through bhakti. That's why it says, even the impersonalists who are serious, if they understand that it's only through bhakti, they take it up, they're able to understand it.
Okay. But isn't it also other kinds of impersonalists who can absorb themselves?
No. In theory, yes, but in reality...
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? You know, there's a lot of theories going on.
Because you can't cut down the mind. artificially, so it has to be.
Yes, you can't get the mind has to be active, the soul has to be active. Yeah. So the Brahman, you're only dealing with the sat element, eternity, and the knowledge element of chit. You're not dealing with activity or prayojana. Right? So you're leaving off half of the nature of the living entity. Right? And the half that they're interested, you know, that's of the great interest, action and results. The pure devotee, however, by following the ways of previous acharyas or authorities, can see the Supreme Lord through the transparent via medium of a bona fide spiritual master. Anopashyanti. Right? So again, we see it's coming up again. Following the ways of the previous acharyas. That's it. We can't underestimate the importance of this. That we're with devotees, working with devotees. Mm-hmm. The pure devotee never tries to see the Lord by mental speculation, but by following the footsteps of the acharyas. Mahajano yena gata sapanta. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 17:186. Therefore, there is no difference of conclusions amongst the Vaishnava acharyas regarding the Lord and the devotees. So, when you're dealing actually, there's no difference in opinion between any living entity in the spiritual world like that, no matter what the realm. They all have the same understanding of this absolute truth. Taste, there's difference. So there the yata ruchum has a meaning, right? Because it is an expression of their particular taste. But here, the yata ruchum then doesn't have much meaning. It just means conditioning. Yes. Lord Chaitanya asserts that the living entity, Jiva, is eternally the servant of the Lord, and that he is simultaneously one with and different from the Lord. This tattva of Lord Chaitanya is shared by all four sampradayas of the Vaishnava school, all accepting eternal servitude to the Lord even after salvation. Right. So in other words, the sampradaya that accepts eternal relationship after salvation, then that's who we'll call your bona fide Vaishnava sampradayas. Otherwise, if they're practicing Vaishnavism, but they don't accept the eternal position of the Lord afterwards, and our relationship with them as servant, then we don't count them actually as properly situated Vaishnavas. Right? Like that. And there is no authorized Vaishnava Acharya who may think of the Lord and himself as one. It just doesn't happen. May the Lord, who in the beginning of the creation amplified the potent knowledge of Brahma from within his heart and inspired him with full knowledge of creation and of his own self, and who appeared to be generated from the mouth of Brahma, be pleased with me. Footnote 14. In the following fascinating demonstration of how Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on Granth Sutra, Srila Jiva Goswami cites verse 22 in the Paramatma Sandarbha, Anuchedas 104-11, that the Supreme is the original author of the Vedic scriptures is also described in Srimad Bhagavatam 111 in the words, Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavaye. It is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge under the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. So that's, therefore, he said, amplify the potent knowledge of Brahma. Right? Because the jiva naturally has that potency of chit. But to understand the unlimited, because we're a limited amount of sat, chit, and ananda. So the Lord amplifies this, and then we can appreciate it. Here the word Brahma means the Vedic scriptures. Adikavaye means to the demigod Brahma. Hrida, let's see. Because Brahma. Okay, yeah. Hrida means not by words, but through the heart. And tene means manifest. The word Brahma is derived from the word brihat, great. In this way it is said that the scriptures, Brahma, are the great knowledge, or the knowledge of everything. Because, as we mentioned, the Vedic Sanskrit, there'll be three terms of the word Brahma. Right? And depending upon where it's situated, it will be marked by the swara in that. And then it will define whether you're talking about Brahman, whether you're talking about Lord Brahma, you know, or in this case, whether you're talking about the scriptures. So it's all these different things. Or it even can refer to the jiva. So therefore, this bringing out the meaning of the word Brahma from the Vedic standpoint has more meaning. The word Hrida here teaches us that the Supreme Lord is the Supersoul in everyone's heart and the master of all potencies. Because he is the original teacher of all knowledge, the Supreme Lord is thus the original author of the Vedas. As Vedanta Sutra 113, Shastrayonitvat, explains. This is also described in the following words of Svetasvatara Upanishad 6.18. Because I desire liberation, let me surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who first enlightened Lord Brahma in Vedic knowledge through Lord Brahma's heart. The Lord is the original source of all enlightenment and spiritual advancement. The liberated individual, souls, are certainly not the original authors of the Vedic scriptures. This is confirmed by the word muhyanti. Even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion. In Srimad Bhagavatam 111, this means that even the great demigods such as Lord Sesha are not the authors of the Vedas. The Vedas are manifest from the breathing of Lord Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, who is one of the many forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As he enjoyed pastimes of sleep, at that time the Vedas were revealed to the demigod Brahma. That the Supreme Lord taught the Vedas to the demigod Brahma is confirmed by the following words of Srimad Bhagavatam 2.4.22. May the Lord, who in the beginning of creation amplified the potent knowledge of Brahma from within his heart and inspired him with full knowledge of creation and of his own self, and who appeared to be generated from the mouth of Brahma, be pleased with me. Now an alternate interpretation of Vedanta Sutra 114, Tattu Samanvayata, will be discussed. After it is seen that the Supreme is the original author of the Vedic scriptures, Shastra Yonitva, the next sutra, beginning with the words Tattu, is spoken. In the word Samanvayat, the prefix sam means all, and anvayat means the truths described in the Vedas. In this way, it is concluded that the Supreme must be the author of the Vedas, for only he has all knowledge. Because the individual soul does not have all knowledge, he cannot be the Vedas author. That the Supreme Lord has all knowledge, and the individual soul does not, is confirmed by these words of Svetasvatara Upanishad 3.19. The Supreme Lord knows everything, but no one knows him. In Srimad Bhagavatam 111, the Lord Muhyanti, by him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion, indirectly affirms that the Supreme Lord has all knowledge, and no individual soul has all knowledge like the Lord. The words Surayo Muhyanti mean even the greatest suras, devotees in positions of cosmic management, like Lord Sesha, are bewildered to understand the true meaning of the Vedas. Right. So as he's going through, he's making these points, because he's going through these different anuchetas, and anucheta then will have the full Panchanga Nyaya within it. So we see is that he wants to get to an ultimate conclusion, but you have to make all these points to get to it. So each point that's made, it gives its examples and everything, removes any doubts, gives a conclusion, then with that conclusion you can base the next premise, and then you can, like this, base it. Right? So we see this as he's going through, establishing the position of Brahma, Krishna, his relationship to him, then how the demigods, they can't know the Lord. He's the only one that therefore can be the speaker of the Vedas. Right? That's why his presentations are so complete. Because even he's making the points, each point has the full Panchanga Nyaya. That's what puts him in his own category of scholarship. The meaning of the word sura in this context is explained by Srila Prabhupada in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 5.18.27. Yet, sometimes suras or devotees are also bewildered by the illusory energy and falsely claim to be the maintainer of the entire universe. So like we see, Brahma comes under that illusion, Indra comes up with that idea. You know, so all these different points. Point is you do sacrifice. Sacrifice maintains the universe. Okay, so how do you do sacrifice? What's required?
Activity.
Okay. Fire. Okay, but somebody, Neanderthal has fire.
Yes.
Grains. Okay, the Vedas are there. But he's not claiming that he's the Vedas, but something he could claim. Grains. And where do grains come from?
Rain.
So therefore, he'll consider, because I give the rain, I'm the one that supports the universe. Yeah. But where does the rain come from? Proper sacrifice.
Yes.
So, you know, so in other words, the whole thing goes around. Mm. But, you know, everybody can try to stop in the place that, you know, makes it look good for them.
Some have a harder time than others.
Yeah. So therefore, it comes up. Because Krishna, being who he is beyond the modes, and everyone else is working within the mode. Because as he mentioned here, what is it? Devotees in positions of cosmic management. Right? Because they're all devotees. Those who are in the cosmic management are all devotees. There's no non-devotees in the cosmic management.
Almost. Almost.
Almost?
Hiranyakashipu.
He wasn't officially managed.
Appointed.
He was self-appointed, yes.
Yeah, it didn't last. It didn't last.
It didn't last, yeah. May the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who enlivens the materially created bodies of the elements by lying down within the universe, and who in his Purusha incarnations causes the living being to be subjected to the 16 divisions of material modes, which are his generator, be pleased to decorate my statements, 22-23. In his purport to verse 23, Srila Prabhupada describes Sukadeva Goswami's mood in offering prayers to the Lord. As a fully dependent devotee, Sukadeva Goswami, unlike a mundane man who is proud of his own capability, invokes the pleasure of the personality of Godhead so that his statements may be successful and be appreciated by the hearers. The devotee always thinks of himself as instrumental for anything successfully carried out, and he declines to take credit for anything done by himself. The godless atheist wants to take all credit for activities, not knowing that even a blade of grass cannot move without the sanction of the Supreme Spirit, the Personality of Godhead. Sukadeva Goswami therefore wants to move by the direction of the Supreme Lord, who inspired Brahma to speak the Vedic wisdom. The truths described in the Vedic literatures are not theories of mundane imagination, nor are they fictitious, as the less intelligent class of men sometimes think. Right? So that the academics, they try to do that. They just say all these stories in the Puranas are not real, they're not facts, they're just, you know, analogies given to like that. It's just standard. The Vedic truths, does that make sense? So in other words, it's always been there. So Prabhupada's making these statements a long time ago. This is second canto, right? So that was written quite early. So they've always been like this. They were like this when he was a kid. They were like this when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was dealing with them. They're like this when any of the Acharyas were dealing with them. They've always been like this. The Vedic truths are all perfect descriptions of the factual truth without any mistake or illusion. And Sukadeva Goswami wants to present the truths of creation not as a metaphysical theory of philosophical speculation, but as the actual facts and figures of the subject. Since he would be dictated to by the Lord exactly in the same manner as Brahmaji was inspired. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 15:15, the Lord is himself the father of the Vedanta knowledge, and it is he only who knows the factual purport of the Vedanta philosophy. So there is no greater truth than the principles of religion mentioned in the Vedas. Such Vedic knowledge or religion is disseminated by authorities like Sukadeva Goswami because he is a humble devotional servitor of the Lord who has no desire to become self-appointed interpreter without authority. That is the way of explaining the Vedic knowledge, technically known as the Parampara system or descending process. So the acharyas have given this, so it's just the way it is, as it mentions here. It's just facts. It's not a matter of opinion. It's just facts. So Sukadeva is just giving facts. People may have opinions about those facts, that's another thing, but they're just facts. So, yeah. So that's the parampara, is that so one can speak very boldly, very strongly, because you're dealing with facts given by the acharyas. Sukadeva prays for the mercy of the Lord, not only for being helped personally in presenting the truth, but also for helping others to whom he would like to speak. Right? So he'll be able to speak nicely, the others will be able to appreciate nicely. That combination, then the Krishna Katha becomes very wonderful. Footnote 15. Therefore, according to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Sukadeva Goswami prays, may the Lord ornament my words by being present in them, just as the Lord, after creating bodies for humans and others, personally resides in those bodies and makes them successful. Having created the bodies by Mahatattva and other elements, he dwells in those bodies as the Antaryami. In a similar manner, Srila Prabhupada prayed, how will they understand the mellows of devotional service, O Lord? I am simply praying for your mercy so that I will be able to convince them about your message. How will I make them understand the message of Krishna consciousness? I am very unfortunate, unqualified, and the most fallen. Therefore, I am seeking your benediction so that I can convince them, for I am powerless to do so on my own. O spiritual master of all the worlds, I can simply repeat your message. So if you like, you can make my power of speaking suitable for their understanding. Only by your causeless mercy will my words become pure. I am sure that when this transcendental message penetrates their hearts, they will certainly feel gladdened, and thus become liberated from all unhappy conditions of life. O Lord, I am just like a puppet in your hands. So if you have brought me here to dance, then make me dance. O Lord, make me dance as you like. You know, didn't mention, this is the Markine Bhagavad Dharma. It's one of the Prabhupada's songs. I offer my respectful obeisances under Srila Vyasadeva, the incarnation of Vasudeva, who compiled the Vedic scriptures. The pure devotees drink up the nectarian transcendental knowledge dropping from the lotus-like mouth of the Lord. 24. In his purport to verse 24, Srila Prabhupada reveals its confidential meaning, quoting from the previous acharyas. In pursuance of the specific utterance, Veda say, or the compiler of the system of transcendental knowledge, Srila Sridhar Swami has commented that the respectful obeisances are offered to Srila Vyasadeva, who is the incarnation of Vasudeva. Srila Jiva Goswami has agreed to this, but Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has made a further advance, namely that the nectar from the mouth of Lord Krishna is transferred to his different consorts, and thus they learn the finer arts of music, dance, dressing, decorations, and all such things, which are relished by the Lord. Such music, dance, and decorations enjoyed by the Lord are certainly not anything mundane. because the Lord is addressed in the very beginning as para, or transcendental. This transcendental knowledge is unknown to the forgotten conditioned souls. Srila Vyasadeva, who is the incarnation of the Lord, thus compiled the Vedic literatures to revive the lost memory of the conditioned souls about their eternal relation with the Lord. One should therefore try to understand the Vedic scriptures, or the nectar transferred by the Lord to his consorts in the conjugal humor, from the lotus-like mouth of Vyasadeva or Sukadeva. Right? Because he's interacting with his internal potency. That's what's coming down through Parampara. That makes sense. So we hear from there. So that's more specific. And because of that, that turns into all these other elements. Music, dance, decoration. So that's all the other elements of the Shastra. It has all those things. So it originally starts from the Lord. Then it expands into all of that. So that's where all that comes from. Right? By gradual development of transcendental knowledge, one can rise to the stage of the transcendental arts of music and dance, displayed by the Lord in his rasa dance. But without having the Vedic knowledge, one can hardly understand the transcendental nature of the Lord's rasa dance and music. So you see, Prabhupada can just as comfortably and exactly explain the rasa dance and these kind of things that Krishna interacts with the gopis. At the same time, as you see, then he's going from the formal element of understanding the knowledge of the incarnations, and that, and then goes into this, and then he comes back. You know, in other words, this is will take there. It's originally from there, but you can only know that if you work on these things here. Does that make sense? Because if that knowledge has its origin there, it descends to us. We have to connect to it at this point, not that. You can't jump. How will you jump? Right? It can't happen. It has to go through the parampara. But without having the Vedic knowledge, one can hardly understand the transcendental nature of the Lord's rasa dance and music. The pure devotees of the Lord, however, can equally relish the nectar in the form of the profound philosophical discourses and in the form of kissing by the Lord in the rasa dance, as there is no mundane distinction between the two. Right? So, in other words, the philosophical discourses came because Krishna is kissing the gopis. That's where it comes from. And that expands out into everything else. Because what's happening is that this nectar is coming from the lotus mouth of the Lord, right? It says the pure devotees drink up the nectarian transcendental knowledge dropping from the lotus-like mouth of the Lord. So we're sitting here, we hear like this. That same nectar, transcendental nectar, is given to the gopis by kissing them. So that's the whole thing. Is there's no problem with the two. But unless you understand this one, you won't appreciate the other. You can't just appreciate the other and not appreciate this. There's no mundane distinction between the two. There's spiritual distinction, but no mundane distinction. My dear King Brahma, the firstborn, on being questioned by Narada, exactly appraised him on this subject, as it was directly spoken by the Lord to his own son, who was impregnated with Vedic knowledge from his very birth. 25. Srila Prabhupada summarizes Sukadeva Goswami's prayers in his purport in the last verse of the chapter. As soon as Brahma was born of the abdominal lotus petals of Vishnu, he was impregnated with Vedic knowledge, and therefore is known as Vedagarbha, or a Vedantist from the embryo. Without the Vedic knowledge, or perfect infallible knowledge, no one can create anything. All scientific knowledge and perfect knowledge are Vedic. But one can get all types of information from the Vedas, and as such, Brahma was impregnated with all perfect knowledge so that it was possible for him to create. And scientists are trying to figure out the creation. Brahma, having the Vedic knowledge, by the grace of the Lord, can understand how to do that. The modern scientists, even though they're so developed, they still don't understand how that works. And then the claim is there that the Vedic knowledge can't give you that. You have to use this inferior knowledge. But it was created by someone with Vedic knowledge. Thus Brahma knew the perfect description of creation as it was exactly appraised to him by the Supreme Lord Hari. Brahma, on being questioned by Narada, told Narada exactly what he had heard directly from the Lord. Narada again told exactly the same thing to Vyas. And Vyas also told Sukadeva exactly what he had heard from Narada. And Sukadeva was going to repeat the same statements as he had heard them from Vyas. That is the way of Vedic understanding. The language of the Vedas can be revealed only by the above-mentioned succession and not otherwise. There is no use in theories. Knowledge must be factual. There are many things that are complicated, and one cannot understand them unless they are explained by one who knows. The Vedic knowledge is also very difficult to know and must be learned by the above-mentioned system. Otherwise, it is not at all understood. People know to some degree, right? There's different scholars, religionists, they know to some degree. But only the devotees actually fully understand. They are able to actually appreciate what it's about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's the factual. Right? The others are theoretical. Mm-hmm. Sukadeva Goswami therefore prayed for the mercy of the Lord so that he might be able to repeat the very same message that was spoken directly by the Lord to Brahma, or what was directly spoken to by Brahma to Narada. Therefore, the statements of creation explained by Sukadeva Goswami are not at all, as the mundaners suggest, theoretical, but are perfectly correct. One who hears these messages and tries to assimilate them gets perfect information in the material creation. So what he's describing is facts. It's not allegories, it's not this, it's not that. It's fact. There may be all kinds of amazing connections, metaphysical and all this kind of thing, but the point is they're all fact. So we don't describe it from the metaphysical point of view, we describe it from the position they're coming from Krishna. That's what makes them very
perfect. That makes it true.
Yes, that's what makes it true. Otherwise, then it just becomes speculative.
Because the so-called scientists, they also have facts.
They also have facts.
Yes, so this is better because it's not just facts, it's actually truth.
Yes. Very good. Okay, so then here we'll continue on. Today's Friday, right?
Yes.
So on Monday.
Monday?
Monday is the Maha Abhishek in the morning, yeah. So it won't be Monday morning. Monday is okay. So not Monday morning.
No.
Tuesday, I'm not sure because I still haven't been able to find out what time we're going, so we'll have to inform. Some are suggesting not, because if we're traveling, then it might not work out.
I'll be gone, so I'm suggesting not.
Huh? He doesn't.
No, I'm suggesting not, because then I won't miss anything.
Yes, well, I'll have to get back. I was hoping to have it. Huh? Yes. It depends on what time the flight is, because if we're not here, hardly have class.
Yeah.
Yeah. We haven't gotten together podcast yet, so no.
Thank God.
So after Tuesday, no classes?
Yeah, no classes until after Bhagavad Gita.
So it's just the possibility of Tuesday morning?
Possibility, yeah, but let's see.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki
jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki
jai.
Jai Nitai Gaura.
There are some devotees from Slovenia, they're listening to your classes, and there is one couple who are, they are taking care for Grihastha, and they asked me if I can ask you two questions for some clarification. Can I record it? Yeah. First is, they would like to know the essence of Garbhodana Samskara.
It's consciousness. It means that you're connecting the consciousness to Krishna.
That's the whole point. Is that you understand is that the idea is to attract, you know, a living entity who is, you know, Krishna conscious, at least favorable to Krishna consciousness. Or even better, Krishna conscious who is favorable to Krishna consciousness. That's the whole point. That's the essential.
So actually, like, and the question is, so what is more important, the chanting the rounds or meditating on which child you want to get?
Yes.
Both of them.
Yeah. He says, like, if the important thing of cooking is to remember Krishna and do it for Krishna, so does that mean that we have to get the spicing right or the salt right, or do we even need to cook at all? Can't we just sit there and, you know, think of Krishna? Instead, there's always a medium for expression, right?
Okay. What is the difference if one did Garbhodhana Samskara or not? Does it attract a different soul, or is karma more influential?
No, because there is no karma. So it's just a matter of you attract according to your consciousness.
Okay.
So the point is it may not seem so important now, but as the child grows, then you'll see the difference. Mm-hmm.
What about artificial insemination? How this goes together with Garbhodhana Samskara?
I mean, it's mantras of chanting and stuff like that. You can work it out. The whole thing is there, just it's not all at one time. Right? Consciousness is there. You still have to have the proper consciousness.
So the procedure is the same, like the chanting and everything. And what is the Vedic view on this subject matter, artificial insemination?
Generally, your traditional method is what's standard. Others would be not considered as ideal. You know, but the point is if that's what works, then
A principle behind statement, woman who gets married a second time becomes an enemy to her son.
Because the point is for the father never changes. The father is going to be, see, for husband and wife, it's a legal agreement, and they can agree or not agree. But for the children, it's a permanent fact.
Mm-hmm.
So it's different. The parents look at it as if their position is the primary and the child's the secondary. But actually, the child's is the primary. You know what I'm saying? Because now, they're dealing with their mother, they have a relationship. Now this new man comes in who's not their father, it's all about the woman. So then, where's the relationship? And how does this work? So there, that's why it's not recommended. Because, see, most adults, they consider it's all about them. They get married, they don't get, it's my choice, it's my this, it's my that. No, what about that? As long as there's no children, it is yours. But as soon as there's children, now it's about the children.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can't understand that, then what to do?
So it also is relevant for daughter. Because this is the question.
It's the same. See, people can adjust because you have so many mothers, but you don't have so many fathers. So you can adjust with the new mother, but not with the new father.
What about if they have a child and the husband dies, and she's quite young and alone with child and nobody to take care of her?
You work it out. It means, in other words, we come up with all these extreme examples, but it doesn't mean it changes the position.
Mm-hmm.
It just means you have to be very careful about something. These things are facts. They're not, oh, it's nice, there's a theory. These are facts. Mm-hmm. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way it works.
Thank you.